Hey everyone, and welcome. I'm Sydney, and this is Hope After Grief. Hey everyone, and welcome back to Hope After Grief. This is season two, starting fresh in 2023, and we are starting off with my personal favorite human in the whole world, Kyla Sapp. And I'm going to give you a little bit of information about her, and then we're going to get started right into it. Kyla is an Indiana University graduate with a bachelor's degree in marketing. She is currently the public relations specialist for a Swedish engineering group covering North and South America. She is also the reigning Mrs. North Carolina American. Since the loss of her first pregnancy in April 2020 and then surviving postpartum depression after her daughter was born, Kyla has made it her mission to partner with and bring attention to organizations and associations who offer resources and comfort to women who have shared similar experiences. When she is not managing PR, she is working with her local medical community to provide therapy options and resources to women who've experienced pregnancy loss and PPD, as well as appear as a keynote speaker and guest speaker at events centered around women empowerment. Kyla and her husband Spencer, my other favorite human, have been married for 4 years and have a 1.5-year-old daughter named Charlotte, my baby. In her free time, she enjoys running, reading, and hiking with her daughter and husband. So, as you guys can hear and probably tell why Kyla is here, just from her bio, Kyla, welcome. I'm so excited to virtually see you, even though the audience can't see you, and let everyone hear your story as I've heard it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really excited to be kicking off 2023 on your podcast. So I'm really excited to be your guest speaker
today. Yes, you you and I have been planning this for a while. I actually heard Kyla's story probably, I think the first time we dove into it was on the plane on the way to Vegas together. So
we bond. Let's just like listen to all my traumas. Yeah, it was.
We're like, all right, we have 4.5 hours on a plane together. Let's trauma dump. And
yeah,
that is what we did. And it was great.
Get to know each other. So yeah, it's to be really honest, it's therapeutic to talk about it. So I was really excited to get to do the podcast, and also I love getting the opportunity to talk about our experience. I say our, like Spencer and I, because it's so funny, men or people always forget about the men when you go through like a pregnancy loss. And I am sorry, just like trigger warning for anyone who is, I'm sure you already have like a preset trigger warning for your show, but I don't like to use the M word. I don't like to use miscarriage. So I'm going to say pregnancy loss, because to like miscarriage to me sounds like I personally miscarried my baby, which I hate that kind of verbiage, because my body held on to that life form with every fiber of my being. So anyway, so you know, a lot of people forget that men also experienced a pregnancy loss, like, and Spencer grieved it in different and also somewhat similar ways that I did. So yeah, I like being able to talk about it, because like on public platforms like this, because then other women stumble across it, and it's just like, it's so much more calming, almost. Like, I hate to use the word like relieving, but like it's relief, but I don't know how else to describe it. Like, when you hear that other women have shared the same experience, it's kind of like you're all a part of this, really. Can I cuss on this? Can I say a bad word?
You can. We won't.
It's just kind of like, I'll refrain. It's like you're a part of this really crappy club. Like, nobody wants to be in this club, but you're in this now really crappy club by force. So, yeah, it's kind of, makes you feel like you're less by yourself. Like, you're not going through something completely by yourself, which I'm sure a lot of other guests have talked about, you know, their experience with grief, and it does help to talk and to hear about other people, and their stories and experiences. So,
well, when I've talked about my anxiety and stuff, I think part of it is, when you realize that other people are experiencing the same thing and those same emotions, not only do you not feel so alone, but you're like, okay, it isn't just me. I'm not abnormal. I'm not, like, I guess kind of like this freak of nature experiencing all this stuff where you're like, oh, there's something wrong with me. Like, no, there's nothing wrong with me. This is normal. This is what everyone's feeling and going through. And even if there is some like different variations on those emotions, it's still kind of that same process that I think having someone to talk to and share with, and they say, oh, I get that. You're like, okay, wow. Like, that's a relief that it's not just me. So yeah, I think relief is the right word for sure.
Plus it's almost like those people who shared similar experiences, like other women that I really found refuge in, after we had experienced our pregnancy loss, they knew what to say to me. Like they knew how to express their condolences and they knew how to make me feel, put my mama heart a little bit more at ease. Whereas people who have not gone through the experience, 9.8 times out of 10, they don't know what to say. And it's not their fault. There's just not very many good things that you can say in that situation.
And I've had some people on here that I've talked to. Obviously, a lot of people that I have had as my guests have experienced loss or grief in some form or fashion. And so a lot of people do talk about the fact that people don't know what to say. Mm-hmm. And that's why, you know, I started this podcast, is to have these conversations so people feel like, okay, this is a normalized topic. This is something we can talk about. This is something where I can say, oh, I'm sorry, how can I help? You know, like people don't shy away from it as much if they know about it and feel comfortable around it. So I'm hoping that that's what this does. But I do want to point out something. I know that after you talked about your story on the Mrs. American stage, that girls, women reached out to you and said, hey, like, this is real. This is relatable. So I want to hear about that. And then I want to kind of start at the beginning of your story, just so people who are listening know as little as much as you want to share, kind of know your background and your story and how you got here.
Yeah. So we'll go to the story first and then we'll talk about the Mrs. American on stage question. Cause that was a really impactful moment for me. Like I went backstage and cried a little bit. But we'll tackle that after I talk about the origin story. So in, oh my gosh, it was COVID. It was like at the start of COVID and everything. It was so wild. You know, Spencer and I had been talking like, oh, I kind of feel like my biological clock is ticking. Like, should we start trying? So me.
I love how you say that. And we're like the same age. And I'm like, oh, yeah.
I know. Well, I just look at him and I was like, I want to have your babies. You know, like it was just like a constant. Like even before we were engaged, I was like, I want to have your babies. Like he asked me one day, he was like, how do you like your eggs? And I was like, fertilized. I mean, while we were dating. So I just always
had a great time. Y'all are adorable. And if you guys have never seen like Spencer and Kyla together, they're like the cutest couple in the world. Like
we're annoying. So. We're just obnoxious. It's disgusting. I hate
I
it.
Love it. I love it.
So we had started talking in late 2019 about, you know, I think I had Mirena for a long time and I wanted to have my IUD removed. So I got it out in January of 2020. And me thinking it's going to take like, oh, it's going to take us probably like a year to conceive. And like my apologies and condolences and my heart and every like fiber of my being, I hate reusing that phrase, but goes out to women who are suffering from infertility. Like I cannot imagine. I have a couple of friends that unfortunately experienced infertility for years. And I can't imagine that kind of, I can't imagine that kind of heartbreak or loss or disappointment. So my heart truly goes out to women who are currently experiencing infertility. I hope that, your bundle of joy comes soon. So because of those experiences, I thought that it was going to take us much longer to conceive. And then in March of 2020, I found out we were pregnant. So it kind of hit me like, way off guard, like threw me way off guard. That I was like, oh my gosh,
the world is also shutting down.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the world is shutting down. Like everything's in chaos. I feel like I'm living in an I Am Legend or like something just like end of days. Like it's so crazy. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And now we're pregnant. And it happened so much faster than I was anticipating that I was like, whoa, like it almost like knocked the air out of me because I was like, oh my gosh, I thought initially this was going to take longer because other people, it takes them so much longer. And so I was like coming to terms with that. And then, towards late April, let me back up a little bit, I guess early to mid-April, I was having really horrible symptoms. Like I was having abdominal cramps. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, you're there.
I was like, am I speaking English? I was having a lot of bleeding and it was so terrible because this is what they tell you not to do, but I almost needed to do it in order to really feel like I had some kind of control over something that was happening to me, because I had zero control over what was happening inside my own body. There was nothing I could do to prevent it. There was nothing I could do to stop it from happening. I mean, truly, I was living with that for like 2 or 3 weeks, because they kept, you know, bringing me into the doctor, and it was like almost too early to detect a heartbeat, and it was very faint. So they were like, this isn't as strong as it needs to be. Like, we'll just keep bringing you back in. Like, some women just have bleeding and others don't. It's just a thing that happens. So I was having bleeding, and it just kept getting kind of more and more severe. And this is like happening over days. Like, this is like days this is happening. So, you know, some women, their experience is different. Some women, it's almost like everything happens at once. And mine was just kind of like dragging out, which, I mean, both situations are terrible. Mm-hmm.
At this point, obviously you're stressed, like I'm you're concerned, so you're, I mean, which a day.
Yeah, which yeah. makes it way worse. Like, stress is actually worse, which Spencer kept telling me. And, you know, and we are, I mean, my husband and his family, and I mean, we were both raised Christian. We were actually both raised Southern Baptist, but we're just going to say Christian for the purpose of this interview. So we can talk about that on a different
get into all that right yeah. now.
So, but my husband is probably, you know, one of the most devout Christian men I've ever met. I mean, his faith is so undeniably strong. And so he just kept like praying about it and saying like, you know, everything's going to be okay. Everything's going to happen. And it's God's, whatever's going to happen is God's will and all these things. So, we finally get to the appointment, and I'll never forget this day. It's like ingrained into my brain. It's something I wish I could forget. But we get into this appointment, you know, and they are doing the ultrasound, and they're like, I'm so sorry, but there's no heartbeat. There's just nothing anymore. And I just, Spencer like threw himself, my husband threw himself over my body almost to like shield me mm-hmm. from like the hurt, I guess.
Yeah.
So we both cried for quite a while in there, and they had people walk me out. They usually have people walk out with you when it's like not, things aren't going well. So they walked us out, and I ended up having to like take pills or something that would help me, because I hadn't passed everything on my own. And if you don't pass it, I mean, you can get ill, you can get sepsis and like die. Yeah. So I had tried to pass things at home, and then they brought me back in, and I still wasn't able to pass everything by myself. And I ended up having to go in for a DNC. And for people who don't know, it's like, I don't know how to pronounce it properly. I'm probably going to butcher this, but it's like a dilage and cuttage or something. But it's anyways, so you have to go in.
So
I'm probably just butchered that. So for anyone in the medical community listening to this, I'm sorry. Don't come for me.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm not a doctor. I have no medical degree. So, but I had to go in for a DNC, and they put me under for it. Thank goodness. Cause I asked, it was just terrible. I mean, I was in hysterics. I was in hysterics going to the hospital. I was in hysterics at the hospital. The only time I wasn't in hysterics is when I was under general anesthesia. So yeah. I woke up, and as soon as I woke up, I just started like, I'm still coming to, and I'm like trying to gather my things. And I wanted to go home. I was like, I need to get out of here so I can lose it, because, you know, that was just, and then I still had to be wheeled out, because that was essentially like a procedure or like a sort of surgery. And so they had to wheel me out. And when I tell you that, like waiting in the lobby where there's other women waiting in wheelchairs with their babies, and you're sitting there not with them, yeah. was a terrible, terrible feeling. And then I finally just like got, when I got into the car, I broke down, like actually just like sobbed hysterically the whole way home. We got home, and, my mother-in-law just like was holding me. I mean, it was, my in-laws thankfully were like so supportive, and they're great. I mean, my parents were very supportive, so thankfully we had a good support system, for that, but it was so wild to me. And I don't know if other women have maybe experienced this, and this is me really opening up, but After that experience, I felt like for, you know, I, in my mind and maybe my heart, I felt like if we just got pregnant immediately, like if we just could get pregnant again, it would be like there was no time in between. It would be like it never happened, you know, because I think in my heart, I just wanted it to feel like it hadn't happened. I didn't really want to process that grief all the way. So I started thinking that. And then, you know, right about the time that I was like, no, we should, because Spencer, of course, is like level headed. And he was like, that we should not do that. Like, that is not a good idea. And I was like,
no, you're so level headed.
I was not at that point in my life. But I started thinking like, no, you know what, maybe that was, like Spencer said, it was part of God's plan. Maybe we were not, maybe we rushed into this. Maybe it's not our time to have children. Maybe we need to be doing other things. And so right about that time, we had just started to get our intimacy back, because we couldn't even be intimate for a long time after that, just because, like, you know, the intimacy part is how we conceived. So like, that's how we were envisioning like being intimate. Like that's how we conceived a baby. So it was just, it felt
painful.
It felt painful. And, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, it just felt, tainted. Is that the word I'm looking for?
I don't know. Tainted. I think tainted's a good word. I was going to say something not quite like PTSD, but almost like, a little like that, like something where, I mean, when you're going into that experience, what you're having is flashbacks to losing the baby instead of being in that moment.
Right. Like, this is how we conceived a baby, and that just, it brings you back there. So, so we were intimate for a little while after that incident. And then, you know, and we had just started, and I still didn't have a Mirena because I just didn't have one put in immediately. I was still like processing everything that had happened to my body. And, so anyways, we were getting our intimacy back. I'll be honest with you and the listeners, I cried the first time. I don't know if that's normal for other women, but like the first time that we were truly intimate after that experience, I cried during, because it
I feel like that's very much normal and it's just not talked about.
Yeah.
Like that sounds like a completely normal experience.
Yeah. And that's why I'm here. I want other women to hear this and be like, oh my gosh, I experienced that too. Or I felt that too. Like you are not alone, truly. And everyone grieves differently. Everyone experiences things differently. But in the event that someone else has experienced that, please don't feel bad about it. I experienced it too. So there's got to be more like us. So we were getting our intimacy back and surprise, we got pregnant with Charlotte. And I had just started to get into that mindset of like, yeah. So I just started to get into this mindset of like, you know, I'm coming out of this. Like that was a thing that happened to me. It was part of our pregnancy journey. It was a chapter in our lives. Like it was a thing that happened. We always like remember that baby. We talk about that baby frequently still to this day.
And one thing I think that's really special about you, and I haven't heard a lot of people do this, but, you know, when you introduce yourself or like you introduce your kids, you say, you know, I have two kids and I have one in heaven and one here.
Yep.
And for me, that's really special because you're acknowledging the baby that you lost. You're acknowledging that part of you. You're acknowledging that child. And a lot of people, it would be really hard for them to do that. And I just commend you on that because it really opens up that conversation right off the bat. And to be that bold, to be able to say, you know, this happened to me, and speak about it. It's just one thing, one of the many things I love about you.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. For a little while, it almost was like insulting when people would ask, you know, when people don't like think about those things, and that's another thing, like a lot of people didn't know for a long time that we had experienced that pregnancy loss. Like we didn't come out and announce it, and we really hadn't told anybody else except our parents. So they were the only ones that know that we went through that experience. But yeah, when people ask now, I mean, it used to be really painful. People would say like, you know, oh, is she your first? Or while I was pregnant, they would say like, oh, is this your first? Or, you know, and things like that. Because in my mind and in my heart, I knew that she wasn't. Like she wasn't the one that came first. So it really, to me, and this is just how I am processing it and honoring the baby that almost was, is just by saying, like, you know, she's our first earthly baby, but we have a heavenly baby. Yes. So, like, that's how we, you know, that's how I prefer to answer it. Because just being like, yeah, she's our first, or, you know, people will say, oh, is she your only? Like, is she your only one? Like, she's an only child. And saying yes, just in my heart, I'm always like, no. Like, my internal dialogue is like, but she's not. So, yeah. So yeah, but we ended up getting pregnant with Charlotte like a few months after. So mind you, I went through this pregnancy loss in April of 2020. The world's still chaotic. So everything's a mess. Like, my life is in shambles. I don't know what's going on in the outside world. And then we find out that we are pregnant with Charlotte in July. It was like July 4th weekend, which is so crazy because I took a pregnancy test that weekend because I was like, oh, it's July 4th. Like, my college roommate was at my grandparents' house. We're really close. We were just like hanging by the pool. Like, I was going to have some White Claws with her. But I always was like taking a pregnancy test first just to make sure. Like, I just
in case.
Yeah, just in case. And so I wanted it to be negative. Like, I wanted that test to be negative because I was not ready to go to be pregnant again. I knew at that point I was like not ready. So I took the test. It was negative. So I was like, okay, I'm going to like have some White Claws, hang out with my college roommate. Like, I vented to her a little bit about like the loss we'd experienced, and like that was therapeutic and it was a good weekend. I don't know why, but I get back to North Carolina and like I hadn't missed a period. Like, I wasn't feeling nauseous. Nothing was weird. And I was like, I just feel like I need to take another test. And this was like on a Tuesday after we'd gotten back, like a few days later. I was like, I know I had that negative, but I need the confirmation. I need to see another negative. So I took another test and it's positive, plain as day in front of my face, positive. And I walked out of my office building. Like, when I tell you I didn't tell my boss I was leaving or going home, I just left. I just left work without saying anything to anyone. And I'm in the car sobbing and I'm calling the OBGYN and I'm telling them, like, I just took a pregnancy test and it's positive and I need to come in to be seen because I'm thinking something's going to go wrong. The floor is going to fall. The rug's going to be pulled out from under me. Like, this isn't good. This is going to end badly again. So I just wanted to, like, I think expedite the process. Like, I was like, just bring me in now. Tell me the bad news. Let's, like, I want to expedite this.
Yeah.
And so this woman, this poor woman who answered the phone asked me, she like took a pause and she goes, do you want to be pregnant? Because I sounded like I was panicking. Yeah. Like, I didn't want to be pregnant.
And I mean, at that point, you're probably like, I don't know. Like, do I?
And again, my husband and I are devout Christians. I've struggled with my faith a lot since our loss.
Which is completely understandable. You know, that was something I almost brought up. And then I was like, we don't really need to super dive into that. But at the same time, it is something that many people experience when losing someone or, I mean, any kind of loss, yeah, any kind of grief. If you are someone who is particularly religious, I mean, you do struggle with your faith because all this time you think, okay, things happen for a reason. And then, you know, that meme or quote where it's like, what was the reason?
Yeah.
Like that's what your mindset becomes. And it's like, what, why, like, why me? Why this? Like, what's the reason? What's the purpose? Why this pain? So no, I've been there.
I mean, a lot of us, almost all of us have at some point have been like, I don't understand the point in this. Like, why would you do this to me? Like, why would you even? And I've asked Spencer, who is my husband's faith is a million times stronger than mine. I mean, that man is just, he's something else. But I will ask him still to this day, you know, I will be like, if we weren't supposed to have that baby, then why did God allow us to get pregnant? You know what I mean? Like, to this day, I still struggle with that question. So, and it's a question I'll be able to ask someone someday at some point. So
someday we're getting answers.
Yeah, someday I'm going to get an answer. So, I even did consider, I was like, I don't know if I can go through this again. You know, it did cross my mind at one point that I was like, maybe I should see myself out of this. Like, I didn't think I could actually go through with the pregnancy again because I was like, something's going to go wrong. And then it as the pregnancy progressed, I was like, it's still just ridden with anxiety the entire time because I was like, okay, we got through the first trimester, but something will be wrong with this baby, like physically or mentally, or something will be wrong with this child because I'm not immune, clearly. Like, I'm not immune to things going wrong.
And I also think that your first pregnancy not only had you question your body, but things kind of happened so quickly that you're like, okay, any second now, everything can change.
And that's exactly how it felt for 9 months with Charlotte. Any second, something could go, anything. And when you think about like a developing fetus in a body, like all of the tiny little pieces and parts that have to do all their jobs in order for a full human to develop like properly, it's a wonder that I'm in one piece. Truly, when they say it's a miracle, it is a miracle that, I mean that she showed up with 10 fingers and toes and 2 eyes and 2 ears. I mean, just like,
it's the cutest little face.
She does have a cute face. I'll admit. I tell her all the time. I'm like, you got a cute face. Like, I just tell her all the time.
Just so everyone listening knows, I am a proud Auntie Sid to little Char Char. Yes. So I do reference her often and brag about her. So if you hear me like, get a baby voice every time we bring up her name. She is the best. Yes. So
she is the best. But I mean, fast forwarding through the pregnancy, I didn't think she was the best, like for a little while. And it wasn't just like I had anything against her or I was resentful at her. There was a time during the pregnancy where I felt shame for feeling excitement or giving love or whatever else it was to her, because I felt like I wasn't honoring the first baby that we had. And at some point I did come to terms with that and said to Spencer, like, you know, it is not fair for me to deny this baby my full joy and excitement because of what we experienced. So that was a whole thing. And
then, I mean, at that point, those mix of emotions, you're still grieving. I mean, if, for anyone who really like didn't get the timeline, April to July.
Yeah.
That is, I mean, you were still grieving, and then all of a sudden, you know, I mean, there is that part of excitement, but I completely understand, like, you're torn between the two emotions. And I know that once Charlotte was born, there were other emotions as well. And I want you to kind of touch on that, because that's something that a lot of women don't talk about as well.
Yeah, I was in a dark place. When I tell you I visited the dark place, like I was in a deep, dark place. And sleep deprivation doesn't help with that. So like your hormones are rocked and you're sleep deprived and you now have this new dependent. You have no idea what you're doing. Like you're figuring literally everything out as you go and you're stressed to the max because you have to keep, it is your job to keep this human alive. She can do nothing for herself. It is your job to keep her alive.
And I mean, even when she's out of the womb, there's probably still that fear that something could go wrong.
You know, what's like, crazy is no one warned me about this before I got pregnant or while I was pregnant, like invasive thoughts, which I found out later is a real thing. And it happens with a lot of mothers postpartum. And I had no idea.
I've dealt with intrusive thoughts. Even, you know, I've never had kids, never been pregnant, et cetera. But I mean, with my anxiety and depression, I've dealt with intrusive thoughts. Yeah. And that's something that, you know, I've had to talk through in therapy. And it's something that many people go through, yet people are almost scared to talk about it. Like, because typically they're, I guess, taboo thoughts that people are like, oh my gosh, you shouldn't say that out loud, like things like that. And so, yes, that is a very real thing. And I'm glad you brought that up because it is something that I've experienced and that so many people experience, yet it's like, oh, if you say any of that, like,
yeah, it's not just new moms. No, it is not just new moms. Like, that is a real thing. And it's not just moms, like men have intrusive thoughts. It's a real thing. So I mean, mine were so bad. It was like, I didn't want to hold her on our back patio because I could envision myself just accidentally dropping her on the and it's not that I wanted to do these things. It's that I could see them play out in my mind. And
that's the thing. Yeah. And the thing about intrusive thoughts, it's not just like bad things happening to you. It's you doing bad things. It's like, what if I just, you know, drive this car off a bridge, like that kind of stuff. Like those kind of intrusive thoughts where you're like, that's not who I am. It's not what I want to do or who I want to be. Yep. And so it scares you and you instantly, you know, get anxiety because you're like, oh my gosh, what if I, like, why am I thinking this? Yep. Those kind of things. And I've deep dove into that in therapy, so we could like go into that all day. But it is real. I mean, even if it's like, oh my gosh, what if like I accidentally drown my child while giving her a bath? What if I accidentally do this? Like all of those things that, I mean, you, it's not like it comes out of nowhere. You've heard of people doing it.
Yeah.
So everything that's ever gone wrong in the world is suddenly in your brain.
Yeah. I mean, I was afraid of carrying her down our stairs, like down the stairs, and her bedroom is upstairs. So I was like, I was very anxious about even carrying her down the stairs because I was like, oh my gosh, I can see myself falling and both of us tumbling down the stairs. Like mm-hmm. It was terrible. So you have that coupled with sleep deprivation, coupled with this is your responsibility. Like she is your primary, but no one else is going to keep her alive. You got to keep her alive. And it's every 2 to 3 hours, 24/7. Like it's a lot. So I went to a deep, deep, dark place where I would literally be holding my baby. And I worried about this for the longest time as she was getting older because she didn't smile for like the first, I don't know, 6, 7 months of her life, like would not smile. Like I thought maybe she was like a sociopath or something. She just wouldn't smile. Like I had no idea what was going on with this kid. But
I shouldn't laugh at that. But now I'm like thinking about how much she smiles now and just like how like,
yeah, she's like,
she is. So it's funny to think about her one, not smiling, but also you calling her like a potential sociopath. Loving she is.
I didn't know. I just thought maybe I thought maybe she was. I was like, maybe she, but you know, the pediatrician is like, she's just very serious. She's just very serious. I'm like, cool, but when does she smile? Like, so I, in my mind, am thinking.
It's still that level of like, is she broken? Did I do something?
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
Is there something wrong with me? Did I do something? Did I break my child? Like, yeah. There's still that level of fear and concern.
And it's so crazy to me how, I mean, if you read like all of this like research that's been done on babies' brains and how they're developing and like nature versus nurture and all these things that take you know part in what forms your personality and what makes you you, and so much of that is from those years when we don't really even have that many memories, but that's really it's so impactful into making us who we are. It's so crazy to me that so much of that is in that time period where we don't really have a lot of memories, but that's really where our personality and stuff is like shaped. So I'm sitting here thinking she's not smiling because I was up in the middle of the night with her sobbing in her face, like looking at her, holding, like caressing her, holding her because I love my baby. And I'm sitting there crying, looking at her going, I can't do this. I don't think I can do this. Like, I'm not a good mom. I'm not meant to be your mom. And then I would like hold her and be like, I'm not good at this. Like, and I told myself those lies, they were lies, for so long, and so frequently throughout the day. Mind you, like I took a 5-month long maternity leave. My husband took a week. So I was home with the baby by myself all day long, which was hard, which also like was hard when you pair it with like the sleep deprivation and the intrusive thoughts and the, you know what I mean? Like it's mm-hmm. a lot. Your hormones are out of whack, like I said earlier. So there's a lot going into it. And I told myself that stuff for so long. I finally got to the point where I told Spencer because it was getting so dangerous for me, not for Charlotte. Like in my mind, mm-hmm. I wanted to put her in a safe place and then go harm myself because I didn't think that I was fit to be her mother. So
yeah. And I guess we'll do like a little trigger warning here. suicidal thoughts, suicidal ideations, those kind of things, because I do want to touch on that. Because I've been there as well. And that was something we had talked about as well on the plane, on a 4.5-hour plane to Vegas. Kyla and I are crying, talking about, unaliving our self thoughts and the struggle with that we had been through. And I'm sure everyone around us is like, oh my gosh, what is this? But I mean, we did bond over that. And like you said, it's something where when you have someone that you know has been through that as well, and you're like, okay, this isn't abnormal. I'm not alone. Like someone else has dealt with these emotions and felt this way too. Like I'm not just broken kind of thing. It's always helpful to have someone. So let's kind of go into that. At what point were you like, okay, this is like a problem. I have to do something about that. Were you officially diagnosed with postpartum depression? Like, how did you decide, okay, I got to figure this out. Like, tell the story. I won't interrupt.
It's kind of crazy. So I mean, I was struggling for a while. And I mean, I was even saying negative things to Spencer. Like, it was to the point where I was like, I think I was subconsciously in a way, like giving hints to him, because I think I like wanted help. I just didn't know how to like come out and say like, I need help. So it was coming out instead, like to my husband, mind you, the father of our child, who's also sleep deprived and he's doing his best. And I was saying things like, I think this might've been a mistake. Like, I don't think we should have done this. I feel like maybe we shouldn't have done this. Like, I'm not fit for this. I don't think I'm right for this. Like, it was coming out in ways like that. And then finally, when I did tell him that I needed help, like from a therapist or something, like I needed professional help. I was sitting on our living room couch together. I was holding Charlotte again, like up against my chest. I'm like patting her back. I'm crying like uncontrollably. And I told him, I was like, I often, trigger warning again, but I was like, I sometimes want to go by myself, not with my child, go sit in the car in the garage and just turn the car on. Like, that was how I was like, I just want to go out that way. Like, I was just like, I can't envision myself doing that. It's like in there with the intrusive thought. It was an intrusive thought.
Yeah.
And so,
Yeah.
And so he was like, okay, we need to get you help. Like, I don't know where to, he was like, I don't know where to start. Cause he's never been in that situation before, but he was like, we need to find you something. And that was probably about 3 months in to Charlotte being born. And I went basically, you know, and they would ask like, here's my problem with the medical community. Sorry. Anyone can come for me who's an OBGYN. I have a lot of qualms with the way that certain things were handled. So they'll ask you like at appointments, like, oh, how are you feeling? Like, I only got checked up on one time. One person came to check on me at my house after my baby was born. And it was like exactly a week after she was born. Here's my problem with that. I was still on a high of like, I'm perfect. He's perfect. She's perfect. We're perfect. Like, I was on a baby high still of like, I brought this beautiful baby into the world. She's healthy. She's my rainbow baby. Look at us. Like, she's beautiful. Like, everything. The sleep deprivation had not set in. The PPD had not set in. The intrusive thoughts had not set in. It was way too early for someone to come in and check on me and be like, hey, but are you feeling okay mentally? And I was on cloud nine. So I was like, yeah, I'm great. I'm fantastic. And no one came back to check on me. There's my problem with that. Here's my other problem. When I did go to finally seek help after I had expressed what was happening in my head to my husband, I told my OBGYN, you know, I was crying and I was like, I need help. Like, I'm not well. And that's kind of what I was telling her. And I was alluding to the fact that I wanted to hurt myself without telling her that, because at the same time, as a new mom, how do you admit that to a professional? Because then you're thinking, oh my gosh, is CPS going to come take my kids?
Yeah. And then there comes that layer of shame, but also like, am I going to be putting him in a hospital for saying these things out loud? Like, you know, is there something wrong with me? Are they going to say, okay, you're not fit to be a mother. Let's lock you up. Take your child back.
Yeah. So you almost don't want to seek help because you're afraid of, like you said, the shame and guilt that's associated mm-hmm. with it. But it's also like, there's so much fear that mm-hmm. comes with it. That's like, what are the repercussions going to be from mm-hmm. me seeking help?
And it's also like, you want that help, but then you also are like, okay, I know that, like, I don't know how to explain it. Like, I know that I like don't want to be in a mental hospital. I know that like I would be better off at home, but at the same time, it's like, you know, is there something majorly wrong with me that can't be fixed?
Right. Like, how severe is it? Like, how severe mm-hmm. is this? And like, I don't have a medical degree, so I can't diagnose myself, but I was.
Same, but I do Google MD a lot.
Correct. Yeah. So we do
some research. It's not good for you.
Yeah, we do some research. I did that day basically tell her like, I need help. I need to better regulate my emotions and like my thoughts. And like, I want to be the best mom and wife that I can be. How do I do that? Help me do that. So what she did is like right out the gate, she was like, here's some medication. And that's fine. It worked for me for a little while. And it didn't make me feel like, it almost made me feel like, not like apathy, but like, I just,
Sedated, like a
yeah, like
little, just
sedated.
like
Yeah,
calm
sedated is a
down.
really good word. So like when she was crying, normally if she's like having a screaming fit and she's really upset and I can't console her, I would be like, then I would start crying and I would start freaking out. And that wasn't happening. Like she would cry and I would just be sitting there like holding her, rocking her, like patting her back. And I was fine. I was totally, I felt like level, like just like a straight line, which was fine. But she also didn't offer me like, here's the name of some local therapists that work with women going through postpartum, or here's some support groups in North Carolina that are where other women. I got offered none of that. Like I am now, or I have been the last several months, or I guess a year, probably about a year. My daughter's about a year and a half. So yeah, probably about like maybe a year to 10 to 12 months, we'll just say that, have been looking into like what are the resources that are available, not just in North Carolina, but in the States. Because I mean, obviously, some companies don't even offer maternity leave. So do we really have support resources for women going through postpartum? Like, I didn't have a lot of faith in the system. And it turns out that across the country, there are some like support groups that were started. Like, there's a support group in Texas that was started by a husband who lost his wife to postpartum depression 6 weeks after their baby was born. And he started this group that basically like it's a therapy group, and women can come and seek help and talk to other moms who've had that experience and basically help get out of the dark place. So because I mean, like I said, the medication, I mean, it helped, but I would have liked to have something else offered to me to go with it, to talk to other women.
Have more because, in a sense, not everyone wants to take medication. I avoided it for the longest time, just because, it's kind of like, I guess, not really a stereotype in my family, but like something where they were like, you don't need to be on it kind of thing. And I think it's like that for a lot of people. And so some people like don't want to go on medication. They want to like try those other resources first. Or some people, are on the medication, but it's not necessarily helping, Some of us get lucky and find medications that work and help and align with what we're doing, but some people end up trying 4 or 5 medications and in that meantime need other additional resources as well. So
Also, while we're talking about like medications and being diagnosed with things, not just postpartum depression, but I'm just gonna give a quick shout out to Taylor Tomlinson. She has a Netflix special where she does talk about like she was diagnosed with bipolar disorder, and she takes medication for that. And she, relates taking medication for those types of things, like me taking my medication for PPD, to like arm floaties. Like if you can't swim, they have arm floaties for that. Like it's just such a good analogy. And I, and she's like, "Well, Taylor, what if people judge me for taking arm floaties?" And she's like, "Well, those people don't really care if you live or die. So maybe screw those people a little bit." You know what I mean? Like, so she's, and I love that. I love it. So, I mean, it's just, and she says early on, like, getting diagnosed with that kind of stuff, like PPD, that was just information I learned about myself so that I knew how to care for myself. And when you look at it that way, she had such a good way of explaining it like that. It takes so much of the shame and guilt and stigma away from it. Like I just learned information about myself. I was going through a lot. I was processing a lot. I was still processing a loss while I was still pro while I was going through, postpartum and this new life change. And I just needed some extra help to get through that time. And obviously, like I hate to like be one of those people, but like I love my life. I love my daughter. She's like the best thing that's ever happened to me. I love the like Ryan Reynolds quote when he's like, "I would use my wife as a human shield to protect that baby." That is me with Charlotte. Like I just like I love that kid. So yeah. So I mean, there are so many resources that are available, not just to your North Carolina listeners, but across the country, like nationwide. There's also like an international postpartum support group that has different chapters. So there's actually a chapter in North Carolina, and I've been trying to kind of reach out to them to see what I could do to like promote what they do and the resources that they offer and how I could work with them in the future. So, because, originally Spencer was like, maybe you should start your own foundation. And I just feel like, that's everyone's go-to, is just to like start a business or start a foundation. And it just feels so saturated that I'm like, or I got an idea, stay with me. I could partner with a foundation that's already in place, you know, that has their foundation, their base, and help that grow. You know what I mean? Like I could work with someone who's already like laid the foundation, that groundwork, and instead of starting from scratch, but basically doing the same thing, you know? So
obviously, you know, it's only been not that long, honestly, since all of this happened with you. Mm-hmm. I was trying to do the math of like July to 9 months plus like 5, 6, 7 months after, and then a few months after that. So the math is hard, so I'm not going to get into that, but it has been like not that long.
Rise in my head, in case you need to know, it has not been that long at all. No. So
all right.
As 2 years, basically, like just over the course of 2 years, we had our first pregnancy, lost our first pregnancy, got pregnant with our second, and then birthed our second. And I went through postpartum, and we, in the process, like grieved, and I, you know, I overcame all of those hurdles and challenges. So it's been like 2 years, that all of that happened. So kind of crazy.
So it's all really fresh, but I know, obviously you're going out, you're speaking about it, you're doing work with this, and, obviously, you know, a lot more to come from you. And I know I will see you do amazing stuff with this, but kind of, you know, at the end of the podcast, I do talk to people about their mission, kind of like that pain to purpose, you know, what's your purpose now? What's your goals now? Other than, you know, bringing Charlotte to see me all the time.
Yes.
What are your goals with all of this? Both, you know, the story of your pregnancy lost and the story of your postpartum depression, because I think it's kind of a twofold thing. Yep. Sometimes, you know, the target audiences overlap, but sometimes it's different.
Mm-hmm. It's mostly, so with the pregnancy loss, I think it's mostly just to share the story, because just to like throw some statistics in there, like 1 in 4 women will experience pregnancy loss. So it's kind of wild. So if you're just like out looking on a busy street, like probably a majority, like, you know, a good portion of the women that you're looking at have experienced a pregnancy loss at some point in their life. So really my goal with that is just to share my story, just to let other women know, like, this also happened to me. Here's how I kind of got through it, even though like everyone's experience is different. Not everyone else is going to get pregnant, you know, what, three months later, something like that, which was wild and was not intended, but you know, I still grieve it. I still grieve it every day, because in my mind, when I had first gotten pregnant, you know, we lost our pregnancy about 6, 7 weeks in. So it was very, very early. Not like, you know, some women will have stillbirths. Unfortunately, some women will lose their pregnancy in the second trimester. I mean, it happens. But it was so early and it went so quick. I want to let everyone know that a loss is a loss, like, period. Mm-hmm. No matter what point in your pregnancy you lost a baby, a loss is a loss. It's still significant. You know, because I mean, someone at one point, things not to say to women who've experienced pregnancy loss.
We could do a whole
things not to say. Don't, like, if you've experienced a pregnancy loss, and it's significant, no matter what, how it happened or when it happened, it's significant. And that's really what I want to get across to other women listening to this podcast, is just, I want them to know that like their emotions are valid. Everyone grieves differently. I became an absolute recluse. Like, I pulled back from everyone except women who had shared my experience, like everyone, including my parents. And like, my mom's one of my best friends. So I reclused from everyone. I just kind of crawled in a hole and disappeared. And that's just what I needed to do for a little while. And that's okay. So that's really my mission. And in talking about my experience with pregnancy loss, is just to let other women know that everyone grieves differently. However you need to grieve in order to move through it or move forward with it, I guess, is okay. And do that. There's other women that, like myself, that are like open to talking about it, and we know what to say. So, you know, don't be afraid to reach out to someone and just say like, hey, like the amount of women that I have spoken with now who have lost a pregnancy because I came out and said it outwardly, they've messaged me privately, is just like, so crazy to me. This is the Mrs. American on stage question.
And I remember your on stage question where you talked about your story and women who were competing reached out to you. And I think also people who were watching online, right?
Yeah, it was wild. It was so wild. So it was crazy because they were, you know, they asked me on stage, like, what is something you want to talk about right now that you didn't get to tell the judges in your interview? And like, let's be honest, I bore my soul in that interview. So I was like, what more is there to share? I told them everything. I'm an open book, really. I'm an open book. I told, I just don't know why, but it clicked in my head that I was like, I should talk about this. I don't know if you can hear my dog barking, but Maverick is barking in the background. So I apologize.
A little bit, but honestly, the funny thing is that Nala perked up. She was like,
that's hilarious.
She's like, oh yeah, there's a friend.
They asked me, you know, what is something you want to talk about that you didn't get to talk about in your interview? And I don't know why, but I was like, the internal dialogue or monologue that I have with myself, I don't know if anybody else has that, but I was just like, you need to talk about this, this is a higher platform than your private interview was. This is more public. You need to talk about this. So I did. I said, you know, I talked about my pregnancy loss and postpartum depression, but something that I guess I didn't elaborate more on with the judges is that I did almost lose my life to postpartum depression. I mean, it almost came to that. And that was kind of, there was obviously more in that answer, but essentially that's what I said. And I got a message backstage, or I saw it backstage on Instagram, from a woman in New York who was not even competing. Who messaged me on Instagram and said, hey, I was streaming the pageant and I heard your answer. And thank you so much for talking about that. So many women don't talk about it. We lost our first pregnancy in, you know, I can't remember what year it was, but, and she was like, and now we have two kids. And I just was like, I mean, that alone, it was one message from one person in another state that I had never met. And I was like, worth it. It was absolutely worth it. Like that was the purpose right there. That's what I wanted to do, was reach somebody. Cause you can't help everybody, but everybody can help somebody. So.
Usually I ask at the end of the interview advice for those grieving, but I feel like you kind of touched on that. Is there anything you would add? I mean, I feel like before you got into it, when you were talking about, you know, find someone and everyone agrees differently, I feel like that was really good advice. But is there anything, I guess, that you think you would add as far as advice, or do you think that touched on it?
I think that's about it. I mean, if you do see someone who posted publicly, like on social media, or she mentions it in conversation with you, then she's at a place where she is comfortable telling you about her experience. Maybe it, like me, it's therapeutic for her to talk about her experience. So don't hesitate to open up to those people. If you're ready, if you're at that place where you're ready to talk about it. Because I found the most comfort and solace in other women who had shared my experience. I mean, truly, women who had lost pregnancies at different points than I did, but we were all still, like I said, in that crappy club, you know, of having experienced pregnancy loss. And I really bonded with them, and I found solace in them. And, you know, we all just kind of like had our angel babies, and we knew that. And it was just the thing that kind of brought us together. So don't be afraid to like open up to those people, because they get you better than anybody else.
Well, Kyla, thanks so much for coming and talking with me and our listeners today. Honestly, you know, you and I, the way we are, we could sit here and talk probably all day. Even though I've heard the story, I always have more questions for you, because I just feel like you're, like I said, you're an open book. And you do always, we always have interesting discussions. So I just love having you here. I love that you're starting off 2023 with your story. And I can't wait for everyone to hear it and hear how amazing you are, because you're my favorite. So,
oh my gosh, tears everywhere. I love you so much. Well, yeah, it's been great. I love getting to share my story, and I'm so glad I could be on the podcast to kick off 2023. So that's great. I hope it reaches somebody who really needs it. Hopefully, I mean, I'm not like, you know, 1 in 4 women are going to go through pregnancy loss. Roughly 1 in 7 women are going to experience postpartum depression. So it's a lot more common than we think, unfortunately. So I do hope that this episode reaches the right person at the right time. So
I agree. Well, thank you. And thank you, everyone, for listening to Hope After Grief.